Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. Today is episode 189 with the title, Raising Vibrations Together. And I have the absolute honor and privilege to welcome Daria Krasnova. Daria is a holistic health advocate and co-founder dedicated to empowering others to heal, grow, and embrace their unique path to well-being. When I asked Daria to describe her superpower, she said that it is championing others' authenticity and curiosity to foster real human connection and change. Hello, Daria. Welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me. So pleased to be here.
We were chatting before we went live here. You found this podcast using ChatGPT. That's fascinating.
That's correct. That's the first time probably I've used ChatGPT as a kind of Google. And I've asked it to find me podcasts where it can be guest, and you were at the top, believe it or not. And I was like, that sounds amazing.
I know. It's incredible. I suppose most of us who run businesses and things, we spend so much time thinking about Google search rankings and keywords and things. And when you told me that, it made me think, hang on a minute. I've got to think about AI as being my new search engine and making sure I appeal. So it's fascinating to know that the Inclusion Bites podcast is ranking top of ChatGPT.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there is a good kind of tendency or trend now to be on the podcast. People would like to share their voice, their opinions, and kind of help other people, empower them with their own stories. So I think it's great that your podcast was actually, well, top one. It was the first one. So I'm sure you get lots of great guests. Yes. Thanks to AI.
Yes. Yeah, it's fascinating. It's fabulous. So judging by your accent, you're not in Portsmouth, where I'm based in the UK. Whereabouts in the world are you?
So I'm based in Glasgow, Scotland, and I'm trying to integrate as much as I can, trying to put those wee Scottish words in my accent. But originally, I was born in Soviet Union, kind of end of Soviet Union, Russia, almost 10,000 miles away here in a beautiful town called Vladivostok on the sea near Japan and Korea. So yeah, that's where my roots are from.
Right over the east of Russia. That's you're right. That is a long way away, 10,000 miles, as you say, the other side of the world almost.
Absolutely, yeah, very, very far away.
How does I'm fascinated. You don't mind me just diving in and asking a few questions about. So, do you remember your life there very well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I was born there and I grew up there, so I spent there 20 years of my life. Before I moved to Germany, where I spent 10 years of my life. And then I've been here for just over 6 years. So I'm very multiculti, and I kind of don't consider myself to belong to any race or any nationality. I'm just thinking of myself as a citizen of planet Earth, literally. This is kind of embracing everything and everyone.
I love that. Yeah, I do consider myself a citizen of the world as well. I think life's too short, really, to sort of put these artificial boundaries on yourself and say, well, I'm this, I'm that. And sometimes it's nice to escape that sort of definition. But also it's nice to have your cultural heritage, that anchor about where your roots are, if you like, your family, your heritage.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's super important to have those cultural things and like people embracing their culture and honoring their culture, because every culture is unique. But at the end of the day, I believe that we're actually all one. So we're all very interconnected. So we should all be creating, co-creating and collaborating and just accept and embrace everyone's uniqueness. So this is how I see the world.
So again, I'm not that familiar with Russia. So right on the East Coast, as you say, towards Japan, how does that part of Russia differ from maybe the bit we hear on the news all the time, the more western side of Russia, the Moscow, the St. Petersburg, the Baltic sort of Russia?
Good question. Well, I left more than 13 years ago now. And I think, obviously, Moscow is more kind of cosmopolitan. I've only been kind of a couple of times, and that was just like a transit journey. And big cities were never for me. I kind of never liked that kind of crazy lifestyle. And so I was born in the end of this, and this were kind of deemed to be criminal era. Well, it's always been, but it's kind of seemed to be a bit crazy after the Soviet Union broke. And so my childhood was kind of, it was interesting experience that only made me stronger, actually. So, yeah, I can't really compare both sides of Russia because I've never lived in Moscow and I've never lived in that part of the world. I know very little of what's happening right now. I don't have even, my parents are here, so I don't have anyone in Russia. I have like a couple of people that I still keep in touch. I mean, they're just having a normal life because they're very far away from all the nonsense that's happening that I obviously do not support. Neither do they, but they just live their life as good as they can, you know?
Yeah. So why Glasgow? Was it just put a pin in the map or you had something to draw you there?
No.
You to Glasgow?
No, I was dating a Scottish guy for almost 8 years. It was a long-distance relationship. I met him when I was in Germany and he was visiting Germany. And it didn't work out. That was a great lesson as well. So we split up during COVID. And then I met my fiancé and we've been together for almost 4 years now. And it's all great. I'm always grateful for every experiences, whether they're bad or good. There's always lessons learned. Yeah, basically a typical story. A guy brought me to Scotland, but I didn't want to move. I kind of felt that Germany was over for me. I kind of exhausted it and I wanted to move somewhere. And I did like Scotland because I visited a few times. So I was like, yeah, why not? Even though it's not going to work out, I'll just stay in Scotland and see how it goes, you know. And here I am.
So you travel for love, and that's a fantastic, even though the love didn't work out, but you've found love again, which is the important thing.
Absolutely.
If you don't mind me saying, your English is really good with a really beautiful Glaswegian accent as well. And did you speak English before you came to the UK much?
Thanks for the compliment, first of all. Well, yes and no. I did learn English at school, but this is your basic one. I always say that what you get taught at the uni or at school, it's nothing compared to when you go into real life and you kind of facing all the accents and different pronunciations and words. They do not exist in the dictionary, and even grammar is like slightly different from what you used to hear at schools. So yeah, I've always been drawn to languages. I speak three languages, so yeah, I think it's kind of one of the things that I actually can learn and absorb, and I'm quite good at, but there's other things that I can't process or my brain can't process at all, which is absolutely fine. But yeah, as I said, we're all unique.
Because the Glasgow accent is very distinct as a regional dialect, isn't it? And some of the words and phrases within Glasgow are, again, very Glaswegian centric. And so I could tell your accent was probably from there. I think I said to you at the beginning of the show, I was in Edinburgh recently, and that's a different accent again. It's a lot smoother and richer, whereas Glaswegian is quite a hard accent, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, I've got
to
a funny story.
It's a bit aggressive.
Totally. And I have a funny story about it. When I first started to, when I first started to date the Scottish guy, he kept saying that word I, but the I meant yes. And I thought he was trying to start a sentence like I was going on I something. So I thought it was like I as me, right? And I was like, he's weird. Like, why is he constantly saying I and then nothing after that? It's like he's starting a sentence. So that was weird. And then I remember being like in a taxi first few times and that guy would speak to our taxi driver and I would understand nothing. I could probably understand like one word, like football. Like, okay, they must be talking about football. I was out, like, God, like, yeah. But now I can speak to a taxi driver. Not a problem.
You sound, your accent is very Glaswegian. Yeah, it sounds, yeah, very, very, very easy to listen to. So, yeah, no, you've
As long as you've done really you can well. Understand me. As long as you can understand me.
I can understand you, yeah. Perfectly. You have very little, it sounds very native. And I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but it does. It sounds really, really, I suppose because Glaswegian dialect is very strong. You say you've got the I and the M's in there and all the other, and the sort of the Scottishness of the richness of the accent. So, yeah, no, you've done well to become Scottish.
Thanks. Integration.
Yeah, yeah. But that's another question, if you don't mind, before we get on to the what do you do? How did you find, so you obviously moved from Russia to Germany, from Germany to Scotland. How do you find it? Integrating, and you use the word integration. How did you find that being a stranger and finding belonging, I suppose, is the word, yep. The phrase I would use?
Well, first, obviously, the biggest shock was moving at the age of 20, just parking my suitcase and moving to Germany, to Munich. And then Munich's got a very strong Bavarian accent, although I did learn some German. Yeah, that cultural shock. I first gravitated, it was really, really hard, and I started to gravitate towards people from Eastern Europe and people who spoke Russian, whether they were from Russia, Ukraine, White Russia, or anyone who would speak Russian, you know. I was trying to kind of do this, but then I quickly realized that this is just me trying to create a safety bubble that's not going to get me anywhere. So I've actually integrated myself into that, kind of met someone who was studying at the uni and at that time was just still studying it. And I started to go out with students and they were all very mixed. So it was Japan, Greece, Italy, Netherlands, States. And that was great to be kind of submerged in that kind of lovely community of people from all over the world. And we were all kind of watching football together. But if for example, Germany were playing German football team, we would just all root for Germany, you know. And it's just, it was all really nice and diverse and inclusive, you know. And that helped a lot. And then just kind of trying not to think where I'm from, to be honest. It's like, I don't think that, oh, I'm Russian and that means X, Y, Z. No, I'm just a human living on planet Earth and just trying to be authentic, you know. So. Yeah, I've kind of gradually managed to integrate. I obviously did have sometimes people being silly or assuming things about me, but I never took it personally because at the end of the day, that's not my problem. If someone wants to then kind of put badges and labels on me, that tells nothing about me. That just tells that person for some reason wants to label me as XYZ and that's not my problem. So if that's uncomfortable, I would remove myself. Yeah. But I would never take it personally.
Well said. Well said. That is what I would agree with. So yeah, absolutely. So what do you do these days? I mean, we titled this podcast "Raising Vibrations Together." So
yeah,
what gets you up in the morning? What gets you excited?
And the business I'm building together with my fiancé, so we're kind of yin and yang in this one, which is funny actually because he's got loads of kind of feminine energy and I've got quite a lot of masculine energy, but I'm a female and he's male. But it's really, really kind of cool how it works. And he's bringing food on the table whilst I'm building Vibe Inside. And Vibe Inside is going to be a platform that educates people about holistic health, complementary alternative treatments, and helps people find the right treatment and the right practitioner, but also self-help and self-tips with the immediate things that people can do literally from today to improve their health. And that goes from anything from neurodiverse and to any conditions, heart, high blood pressure, Parkinson's, any condition you can think of. And we want to create also a community that's based on love, compassion, kindness and gratitude. And yeah, everyone to be authentic, everyone to be included and celebrated and support each other, you know. So that's kind of a bit of a further step. But Yeah, so we're building the platform at the moment, and I'm submerged into that in a beautiful world of holistic health and kind of spirituality, but also intertwined with quantum physics, which sounds scary, but it's not. It's actually beautiful.
I've got to ask, quantum physics, so in what way? So you talk about the vibration, so it's about the, about the atoms, is it, at the quantum level?
Yes. So basically everything is energy, frequency and vibration. We are 99.99999 empty space. Like, I'm an empty space. So when someone says you're nothing, I totally agree. I am nothing because I'm in empty space. Basically, you are the energy that, you know how people come into the room and you either feel better or you feel worse. Like, this is all real. This is not a woo-woo stuff. This is all quantum physics. So the reality we see around us, this is all based on energy, frequency and vibration. So it's very powerful tools that we can have on a daily basis, make conscious decisions and improve our life, our health, and physical and mental and spiritual. So quantum physics got some amazing discoveries, such as we've got trillions of atoms in our body, and each single atom contains all the information in the universe. So you've got all the information in the universe contained in your body. So if you maybe think of the movie Matrix, how they could like quickly access the skills and the tools they needed, right? That is in theory possible. We just kind of forgotten the power we have within. So we can tune in lots of things. I'm not saying it's going to be like in the movie Matrix, but as it is a movie, but that just gives you an idea how actually powerful we are and as human beings. So this is what quantum physics is about. And it's not an empty space around us. It's actually filled with energy. So zero point energy was kind of considered to be nothing, like zero point. It's just static. Nothing's happening. But actually new discoveries showing us that it is teeming of energy. So absolutely everything is energy. Nothing is empty. So it's just fascinating, and it can be broken down to easy things, easy steps that can we can implement to kind of have a better life, you know? That's what we all want, I guess.
So what are the challenges that society is facing right now from a health epidemic problem, if you like, you know, holistic health problem? What are people, what's going wrong in the world?
I think what happened is we over-relying on Western medicine. Western medicine is amazing, saving lives as we speak. Someone in a car crash, I don't know, giving birth, broken leg, anything. Absolutely fantastic, amazing. But as humanity, we decided to over-rely on it. Something happens, we run to GP. GP, they don't have time. They give you a tablet. You're just fighting the symptom. It gets worse and worse. Before you know, you're on a 5 medication a day and you're not healthy. You're dismissing the absolutely simplest steps that you could take to prevent things. There's some stats that have seen that 70% of the UK are on prescribed drugs. 57% of adults are eating highly processed foods, and 64% of kids are eating highly processed foods. I mean, what we eat, what we put on our skin and what we process in terms of the news that we've been fed, the kind of gossip and negative thoughts, like all that stuff is just penetrating us and it's just making us sick. So I think, yeah, we kind of are over-relying on what's in the supermarkets and we're trusting blindly. And we're not doing our due diligence, and we just became lazy and not kind of interested in actually doing things ourselves, because no one's going to fix anything for us. We are the ones who can fix things, you know, and we have this enormous power that we've forgotten. This is, I believe, one of the problems, and that caused, yeah, that caused a lot of divide in the humanity.
Species, we've become, I'm going to say lazy. Or we latch on to convenience. I think it's a human trait that lazy people are more efficient because they don't do things the hard way, they do the things the easy way. And we live in a world, well, certainly in the UK world, where we have to work. Most of us have to work to put, and both of us, if we're in a relationship, both people have to work. So having a family, taking time out, we find ourselves working all hours, maybe one job, two jobs, gig, multi gigs, running a business on the side of employment. We don't have the luxury, I call it a luxury, that maybe my parents had back in the 1960s, 1970s, where my mum stayed at home raising three children. My father went off to work. Even though it was tight, they could afford to have one earner and one permanent house person. But women want to work. Women want to work. Women want their place in life. You know, we don't want it to be the primary caregiver all the time. So food is convenient, isn't it? Ready meals, McDonald's, fast food. We've developed a lifestyle around it.
100%, yeah. Yeah, I think we've trapped ourselves a bit, and I totally agree with you that earlier, not that long time ago, it was possible for a mother to dedicate time to her kids. So what happened now? We have kids, and then we need to work to earn money, so we give our kids for someone to raise our kids. Like, this is just weird. That doesn't make any sense. And then I know lots of people who are so overwhelmed with parenting just because we lost the sense of community. It's like there is no people around you who can just support and just keep an eye on a kid, you know? It's just like, I think we really need to go back to the roots of this community, of this people kind of knowing each other and supporting each other and kind of collaborating and co-creating rather than this constant competition. And, you know, people think they need to live in a certain postcode to have a successful life. You're like, what? Like, to have a certain car, and then they work overtime, and then, I mean, the stress levels, it's ridiculous. And I cannot stress enough when I speak to people about neurodiversity and the conditions we've got. This is like the influencer factors of this are actually dependent on what we eat. So what we eat and the lifestyle we've got in terms of stress, like, for example, you've got a kid whose parents are constantly working, they can't see the kid enough, and then the fifth kid some, yeah, food that is not that great, but they just don't have time to cook as well, you know? And then it's all that stress. Kids can feel stress. We all can feel stress. Again, everything is energy, frequency, and vibration. So they absorb all this stress. They have been traumatized, and poor parents, they just don't know what they're doing. They're trying to survive it and survive a lot. Yeah, they're going to traumatize their kids, obviously, not intentionally. And then the food, and then everything around us, what we put on our skin. And then we've got ADHD and autism, and like, well, let's not blame the genes. Many people are saying, oh, this is genetic condition, this is genetic condition. No, what can we actually do to feel better? The studies are amazing, and I speak to people all the time, and it's really great examples of kids improving. So the symptoms are going away by from 50 to 75% of the symptoms are away. Kids who just changing, by changing their diet, they couldn't speak, and then all of a sudden they speak. And that is just by changing the diet. So, but yeah, the pace of life and the expectations from the humans, it's just, I don't think we can go on like this for any longer. I think we need change, therefore. Don't know what you think.
Yeah, completely. When I was growing up, let's say, I've just turned 60, so I grew up in the 60s and 70s. That's when I was a kind of a kid. I would get up, go to school. I'd do a paper round. I'd deliver newspapers before I went to school. I'd be up at 5:30, deliver newspapers, come back 7 o'clock, have my breakfast, and then I'd cycle or walk to school. And I'd get home in the evening, I'd do another paper round, I'd get back in, I'd maybe go and play football with my friends in the park or running around, get my bike out, cycle around, do stuff, play marbles. And then I'd eat my tea and then crash by about 9. And at the weekends, it was even, or school holidays, I was up, gone and out. I very rarely sat around watching telly. Back in those days, don't want to sound like dark ages, but television was only a short amount of time each day. It used to go off. You'd have the children's programs, then it was the news, and then it was bedtime sort of thing. But I think today there's too many sedentary ways of occupying children. You know, computers, nothing wrong with them, nothing wrong with phones, nothing wrong with gaming. But most of them are mental activities or stress activities, not exercise activities. And people build relationships online, which is great. They connect with the world, but they're not actually, as you say, just hanging out and chatting face to face.
Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah, we lost that. And I did meet my fiancé on Tinder, but But that's fine, you know. But as long as we're not sitting on our night dates like this, like on the phone constantly and not chatting to each other, because people take it to extreme. And it's like interesting topic that I actually wanted to bring, if you don't mind me, which is very kind of might be controversial, but we've got this neurodiversity, then we've got people with neurodiverse conditions. And I believe we are all to a degree neurodiverse, some less, some more, some struggle less, some struggle more. The problem we've got here is that some people use it as an excuse. Like, they don't work on themselves. They don't work to realize, understand what this condition is, where is it coming from, how to cope, how to make their life better, and how can they integrate in the society and understand their patterns, understand what's happening, for example. Because, I don't know, I had, for example, I'm neurodiverse myself. For example, I can absolutely not process numbers. Like, talk me about numbers. I have not. I just, like, it's like, feels like you're talking Chinese to me, and I don't know Chinese. So, German, English, Russian. I've had an interesting kind of, thing happen to me. The person basically didn't treat me well at all. Like, just quite rude. And I brought it up. I said, look, I don't know what this person is going through. Maybe this person is not feeling well or overwhelmed by something. I would like to bring it to attention because I don't think people should be treated like this. Let's figure out what's happening so it doesn't happen again to anyone else or me. And the response I get, this person is neurodiverse. It's not an excuse in terms of, like, we can't just hide behind being neurodiverse. How can we all be kind to each other, you know? Whether we're neurodiverse, whether we're on age or whatever, even if you've done something, be brave enough to apologize. I have horrible days sometimes and I can lash out on my fiancé, but I recognize that. I'm like, look, I was overstimulated. My brain couldn't process. Yeah, I said I didn't mean this. You know, it's just like understanding how can we be kind to each other in those things. And there's lots of things that can be done, because if, let's say, someone has a really bad neurodiverse condition and they're really kind of, they're struggling a lot. And then let's say over the weekend they were partying and fueling themselves with alcohol and horrible food, which can only make their condition even worse. And then come Monday, this person came to work and was horrible to everyone. Surely this is not a nice thing to do. Like, I believe that everything starts with self-love. So if you are kind to yourself, if you work on yourself and you aim to become the better version of yourself, the healthier and the more kind you are, you feel better. And then everyone around you will feel better, because you'll be kinder to them and you'll react less. Like, I was reacting to people, but now I'm like, whatever, that's not my problem, you know. If someone, I will raise it and I will protect my peace and I will remove myself from situations, but I'm not going to react. That just, I would love to help people and make them understand what's happening. And the other thing is, we've got, it's kind of the part, the neurodiversity, and then I group it in three. So neurodiverse people, then the sexual orientation, and then the social ethnic background. So there is an interesting thing that I think we dismiss. There is a percentage of people who got confused about their sexual orientation because of the trauma. And those people are actually deeply suffering. I knew a few cases of people being abused in a childhood, and that created them to pick a certain sexual orientation, but they're broken and they're suffering. They're depressed, they're anxious, they're on medication. And I think we need to be very careful and understand where this person was born that way, you know, because we're all unique, but that group of people who are actually deeply suffering, I think it's important to recognize this and address and help those people, because they're making choices based on their trauma and it only hurts them more and more. I had a certain perspective about sex, for example, because of certain things that happened in my childhood. But once I realized, I was like, okay, it's actually fine. There's nothing wrong with sex, you know? So yeah, I don't know what your take on it, because obviously you've got your own story. So what do you think? Do you believe that some people, there is a percentage of people that we need to be mindful of and think, like, this yeah. is probably yeah, what I've just described. What do you think?
My starting point is always each of us have a personal responsibility for how we show up in the world. Then acknowledging that each of us may well need additional help and support based on whatever, whoever we are mm-hmm. in society. So call that equity, if you like. But yeah, I'm a great believer that I have to take personal responsibility for being the best me I can be and not pushing it onto somebody else or society straight away. What can I do first? And so I think it's important that we try and create that balance where I take responsibility, I can then advocate to somebody else for what I need help with, and then that person can tell me how they're showing up and tell me how they want to interface with me, and then we have a conversation. Because if you both sit there and say, well, we're both neurodiverse, you don't do numbers, I don't do numbers either, one of us has to do numbers, so between us we have to figure out the numbers. So I think somehow we've got to develop this a better technique for negotiating our communication with somebody else and finding a common language, a common ground, a common perception where we can communicate effectively. I suppose it becomes frustrating when people push it back to everybody else to deal with. So yeah, it's just trying to find that balance. I read something the other day, and someone's identified that one of the reasons people are growing up into adulthood with more anxiety, with more stress, with more poor mental health, is we haven't maybe spent enough time as a younger person with our parents, with our mum, learning resilience, learning about failure, learning about things not working, where people are maybe being brought up in a world now where things have to work first time, or someone's going to fix it for you. And there's cartoons showing that in the old days, I sound like an old person. Well, I am an old person. when you went to parents' evening, the parent would be putting it back on the parents. This teacher would put it back on the parents about how you're bringing your child up. And now in parents' evening, the parents are pushing it to the teacher, saying, "What are you doing for my child? Why is my child failing?" Being the other way around, the parents taking responsibility. Maybe there's a different relationship now, where people are growing up in a world where they're not getting the resilience, they're not getting the parental love, they're not getting their support to grow their personality, become resilient. I think we're lacking resilience in our adult life today.
Yeah, absolutely. It's on one side, it's everyone's own responsibility to grow up and then address the things that happened. And it's not really the things that happen, it's how we reacted to them, because the coping mechanism can turn into neurodiversity, it can turn into disease, it can turn into anxiety, depression, it can turn into hatred towards a specific sex, for example, just because something horrible happened, right? Which is not right. So it becomes we get toxic femininity and toxic masculinity, you know. We push each other apart. We're just creating so many groups and communities, and it just grows and grows and grows. So I'm questioning myself, well, where is the diversity and inclusion if we all gonna have so many groups and there's only specific people are allowed in those groups? How do we come together? How do we embrace the masculinity and femininity in its beautiful shape and form and all the aspects? It's like it's a spectrum of a rainbow, you know. Some people like yourself, well, I'm more of a masculine energy, but I'm female and I still like my female stuff, but I've got this leadership and whatever, you know. So it's we're so different. So I think it's about, yeah, recognizing your own power, recognizing that you can heal from things that defined you because of the traumatic experience that happened to you, and then help each other, you know, just be there for each other. Because I believe that everyone is just another version of me, which just sounds crazy, but according to quantum physics, we're all one. So you're just another version of me, and I'm just another version of you. So I cannot get angry at you, because you're just another version of me. I will accept you the way you are, and it's just we obviously tend to gravitate to some people more and some less, and this is based on our uniqueness, you know. But I will never hate anyone because of anything, you know. I've been treated horribly, horribly. I've been hated by all kids at school and by all teachers. There was a teacher who was telling me that my name does not exist, so she was calling me a different name. Like, this is just, I was obviously hating this teacher, but I grew up and I've worked through my traumas and I'm still working through them. And I've realized this teacher was really traumatized as well. This woman was unhappy. And then I was bullied by males as well at work, like really bad stuff. You know, I was told things, I was told I'm thick and I'm stupid and whatnot, you know, and I forgave them all. And why? For my own sake, because there is no need to hold on to anger, because we're all, I believe we're all one, you know. And if, see, if the people who hurt me will come over to me and say, Daria, I need help, I'll help them. Not to obviously if I can and if they open to it. But I'm not going to hold any anger. I just refuse. So this is the world I want to see, you know.
That's really interesting. I like what you said there. You know, don't hold on to the anger. You know, you have to... bring it back to fundamentally, we are all one. We're one species. At your quantum level, all parts of the universe together, just a different assembly of atoms, aren't we? And
yeah,
lots of, as you say, lots of gaps between us.
And well, it's the universe. I would say it's the universe experiencing itself according to the teachings of kind of spirituality. Like a funny fact, not a funny fact actually, but that's quantum physics as well. We are drinking the same water molecules as Jesus was drinking. So this is just mind-blowing, you know, but it's science, you know. And yeah, I'm not religious. My belief system based more on spirituality. Everything is everyone and we're all one. Yeah, and this is what we've forgotten. And then we've forgotten into that we're all one and we created divide, borders, wars, and trying to figure out who's better, you know? You are who you are. You're not better or worse than anyone. But that's the thing, I believe. Don't know what your thoughts.
It's just a collection of atoms that's formed a molecule. You know, if you go back to the formation of the universe, whatever your theory on that is, it was all just dust or atoms of, I guess, the primeval atoms, the hydrogen, helium, carbon, those sort of kind of the fundamental building blocks of the universe.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we are, what, 55 or 50% we share DNA with banana? And then we are like 85% sharing DNA with dogs and cats and, I don't know, 40% some kind of fruit fly or something. We're really everything. Like, that's another thing that we've forgotten, that we are nature. I'm sorry, but Oxford Dictionary is saying that we are separate from nature. But I disagree with that. This is my belief system. Take it or leave it. But I believe we are nature. It's kind of, yeah, the science backs it up, you know. So that's the other part we've forgotten and then created that divide and that went into health problems and mental health problems and just kind of a bit broken at the moment, let's say.
Yeah, I'm a great believer that our DNA is effectively just a computer code. And, you know, if you look at most computer programs, computer code, it has core blocks, you know, as a beginning, a middle, an end, as subroutines, as this. So it's not surprising that our core code, if you like, is very related to other living organisms that are based on a carbon-based ecosystem. So we're all going to be processing oxygen, light. If we were a silicon-based culture, we would have different ways of processing things. But fundamentally, because we're all growing up in a very similar ecosystem, our DNA and how we process things in this planet is going to be very similar. So yeah, I completely agree. And all our programming is doing is telling how our atoms and molecules and cells in our body how to configure themselves.
Yeah, but the beauty is that we are responsible for that. We can change. There is another science that called epigenetics that tells us that your environment, the environment you live in and how you treat yourself and what is the world around you, including what you eat and what you consume mentally as well, your thoughts, your emotions, that all defines your genes. So the new studies are actually showing, I've just seen it recently, and it's, I can't remember the name, I think it's a German scientific journal that's 150 years old, saying the new studies are showing now that cancer is not a genetic disease, it's rather metabolic. And this is amazing because that gives us more power, as every single person is responsible and can be responsible in a good way and has the power to actually prevent and have less chances of having cancer and not just playing a victim. I've met people who were just playing a victim and saying, oh, nothing I can do. Everyone had cancer in my family. No. This is just you're actually installing this belief system in your head. So you're going to more likely to have cancer if you're going to constantly believe that you're going to have cancer. But if you act on your lifestyle and improve it, then you're less likely to have cancer. So why not to go this route? There's no need to fall into this. We always kind of tend, and it's very tempting, to become a victim of the things around us, you know, like blaming everything and everyone and not taking responsibility and thinking, what can we do? Like things happening with me, not to me. Because if they're happening to me, I have no control, you know. But if they're happening with me, I'm like, okay, I can do something about this. I can change things, you know, whether it's health or the people who are around me. But I believe there's enormous power we've got within.
Tell me more about your vision for your Vibe platform. I'm listening to what you're saying. I'm thinking, this sounds, I love your wisdom here. Where does Vibe come into my life?
So Vibe Inside, yeah, first of all, we'll be, if someone lands on Vibe Inside, which we're currently building, as I said, is to educate yourself about the holistic health and how important it is, body, mind and soul. And the first immediate steps that you can do to improve your health, improve your lifestyle, and then to discover the treatments and the practitioners and book and pay, and if it's online, attend the treatment. We would love this to be a part of Western, like integration, integrate with Western medicine, be a part of GP, and this is a very long-term goal. But we want to empower people to take responsibility, accountability for their own mental, physical and spiritual health. We want to encourage them and give them tools and help them to basically build their own reality and then create a community around it, and also almost like potentially a social media platform where everyone can be authentic, not pushy, you know, not like there is a lot in social media that is obviously good, but equally toxic. People are pushing the way, like, buy my book. This is the way. This is the product. We don't want any of that. So we want to encourage people to find their own unique way, because at the end of the day, everyone will have their own unique way. You can't just say, well, this is definitely going to work, you know, and this comes from this uniqueness that each and everyone's got, and supportive community where people can share knowledge. And yeah, just kind of the opposite of the toxic part of the social media that we can see nowadays, you know, and yeah, which is sometimes sad to see. Like you look at the people and the broken, you know, and the confused. Yeah, bringing everyone together back and going back to the roots. And it's simple, you know, and we would love to see Western medicine to integrate. And we've got plans to try and suggest this to Western medicine, because I think we should work together, again, collaboration and co-creation. You know, if someone broke a leg, obviously they're not going to go and have a Reiki session. This is obvious. But now we've got loads of studies that prove, for example, that Reiki is very helpful for cancer patients while they're having a chemotherapy. It really, really helps people feel better, you know. So that's support and integration. So Vibe Inside, again, Vibe Inside, from inside to the outside, you know. So the vibration you've got inside, the energy you've got inside, get it on the outside, align yourself, and then spread the love, spread all the good stuff. And actually, I believe we are going into kind of golden age. We just need to come through turbulent times where it's all messy and confusing and there's lots of kind of horrible stuff happening. But at the end of the day, I think we're going to come out on the other end where it's going to be a beautiful world. I might be sounding too optimistic, but that's my belief system, you know?
Yeah, no, I get it. We talked about some things earlier about, you know, what's going wrong in terms of the food we're eating, stress levels we have, the cortisol levels in our heads. We're always on, we're always doing stuff. We never have time to relax. Our pulse is always high. We're rushing. We're not relaxing. We're not getting enough exercise. Obesity levels are high. It has an impact on health and well-being. Where does someone like me start? I've just turned 60 and I'm thinking, I want to live a healthy life for another 15, 20 years if I can. So I've gone, right, I need to do something. What's my first thing I need to start thinking about? How do I do an audit of my life?
Yep. Well, first of all, get curious about things, about your body, mind and soul. Everything that you consume, start from your body and what you eat. Educate yourself on what are the good ingredients, what are the bad ingredients. Unfortunately, supermarkets got loads of carcinogenic food, but we still got a choice to between a carry out, lazy carry out, and cooking something from scratch. And I can tell you more, not everyone loves cooking, but if you try and integrate cooking, it can be as good as meditation because you're very in the zone. So you're killing two birds with one stone. You can be relaxing and trying to cook something you're creating, and we all here on this planet to create. So educating yourself about food, educating yourself about what you put on your skin. Please, please, please don't be scared of the sun. This is like one of the worst things I've been put in our head. I'm not saying you should be basking in the sun for like hours and burning to crisp. No. But there is no need to put a sunscreen, whatever you call it. If you just 10, 15 minutes outside, get the sun if you can, please. It's 10, 15 minutes of your day. I guarantee it's not going to do you any harm. It can only do you good. Ground yourself. Do simple things. Take time to go to nature. Pub to nature. That might sound really hard for some, but every drop of alcohol is a toxin. And we've been tricked into thinking that it's good for us. Just reduce your alcohol consumption. If you do drink alcohol, I'm talking about everyone here, because your advice I'm giving to you is applied to everyone who's, I don't know, 18 plus, you know. So, and start integrating the small things in your life, like what you consume food-wise, what you put on your skin. Nature is extremely important because we are nature. Just get your feet on the ground, again, 10 minutes a day if you can. If you've got a wee garden, on the beach, anywhere you are, super important. Try and find ways to relax your body. And people say, I can't meditate. And I just hate that saying, I'm sorry. But start small. Put the music of nature, like who hates music of nature? Does anyone hate the birds chirping and the waves crashing? I don't think so. I mean, there might be, but just put that music on and just try and lay down for 10 minutes, relax. Just try not to think of anything. Don't be hard on yourself. Start painting if you like. Find something that you can dedicate time and be creative. Just be curious in what's around you, you know, and there's different ways. Again, it's fine about finding your way. And don't be afraid of facing your demons. We all have got them. We all have got things from the past that hurt us really badly. And it's really necessary to get them out if you didn't yet. And I'm still digging some out and I'm like, ooh, that hurts, you know? But that hurts if you address it and you feel it and you release it. Complementary alternative treatments, it's amazing what it can do. Many people don't believe, but I'm a living proof of that because I was taking antidepressants for almost 20 years. I had severe anxiety and panic attacks. I couldn't leave the house. I was calling ambulance to just get injected some stuff so I can come down. Horrible, horrible, horrible. I came up with them and understand that the power is within. You are absolutely unlimited human being. You can do anything you want in your life. You can be happy. It's really your choice. It's really how you look at the world. Yes, if you're 60, you might not going to be a gymnastic or like, I don't know, the first one, the best swimmer in the world or something. And that's fine. But you have passion and talents and values that you can align. And in your case, I believe you are aligning them. So you're definitely doing a great job here. But yeah, the mind, try not to consume all the garbage that's around us. There is no need to read those news all over again and gossip about them. Can you do something about it? Then go and do it. If you can't, there is no need to just constantly gossip about things because there is this thing. People talk about politics and people they hate. But what you do, you're giving away your power to them. You're getting all this adrenaline rush and you're getting really stressed, like all these politicians and this and that. But what you do, you're just stressing your body. So it's rethinking those patterns as well. Do they deserve your time? I don't think they do, you know. So positive mind.
Yeah. Everything you said makes perfect sense. Be mindful about what you're eating. Be mindful about your stress levels. Be mindful about how you interact with people. Take personal responsibility. We've lost a lot of that art as a society. So everything you're saying, you probably find that most people will agree with you fundamentally. It's a secret of a happy life. We're quite lazy. We're quite habitual. We've got sucked into this lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just our own self we're worried about. It's how we interact with everybody else around us. Everybody else's lifestyle has an impact on us. And so we're all connected. It's really hard to buck the trend and get off the conveyor belt and say, stop. Most people just get sucked along in this life of doing stuff until they have a crossroads, an impact, a diagnosis, or something's happened in their life that nudges them into waking up. How can people start to be curious without having to have a life-changing epiphany?
Well, do you want to suffer? Some people actually do want to suffer. This sounds bizarre, but I came across people who would like, nope, I like my suffering. I generally do. And not everyone's meant, and that's fine. You know, it's I accept people's belief systems, and if they want to suffer, let them be. But you need to want to change. And I don't think there is a magic formula here. How do I do this? Well, ask yourself, do you want to suffer for the rest of your life by being in this comfortable zone that you're in? Your ego, it's keeping you in this comfort zone where this pain is familiar. You know how to deal with this pain. You're still suffering, but you still know how to deal with this pain. Or do you want to embrace the change? Because I can tell you one thing, that nothing new is going to happen in the known. Nothing exciting is going to happen in the known. You're not going to find good life in the known if you're not happy with your life right now. It's going to come from the unknown, something new, something you've never tried. You need to come out of your comfort zone, trust the process, you know. And I always recommend people to try and write down their values, passions, and talents, and literally write them down. What are your values in life? What are you passionate about and what you're good at? And if you act on that as long as you can, as good as you can, you will arrive at where you feel better. Because everything that's in our head is a belief system. That's it. And if it's just a belief system, it can be changed. I believe.
I'm a subscriber to emotion intelligence as a concept.
Yeah.
And The first step of emotional intelligence is understanding, that self-awareness. So everything you're talking about here is about trying to unpack who you are. You've mentioned core values, how you interact with people, how you communicate, your personal responsibility, how you show up in the world. And you cannot influence yourself until you become aware of who you are and all those dynamics. Because the second stage of self-emotion intelligence is that self-regulation, how to develop that better interaction with society. So everything you're saying really resonates from an emotional intelligence starting point. And that self-awareness, that sentience, that connecting yourself to the world and your interfaces, it's got to be the first step for me.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. It can be, I think people are afraid of the pain that they can cause, the process to actually become free and to become who you are and to become authentic, because people will leave your life. And sometimes it can be your closest people. It can be your friends and family, unfortunately. But again, do you want to be yourself or do you want to just suffer and be a people pleaser? We do have sometimes situations where people have to lose everything to become free, actually. And regain kind of the authenticity and find their real tribe, you know, people who actually accept them for who they are. And it's beautiful once you find those people, because they're out there. They are, like, I guarantee you, they're out there. But you need to be yourself, because if you're not yourself, then I lost two friends last year because I'm becoming more and more of who I am. those people just disappeared from my life. And I'm like, whatever. I wasn't aligned with them anyway. So,
yeah, I think we in today's modern age, we collect friends, we collect likes, we collect reactions. We judge ourselves on how people see us. And it's getting back to the fundamentals. And I think you're right. We have to let go of the prisoners of our beliefs. 10 years ago, when I changed my life, I lost people. Well, I say lost. We drifted apart. I didn't lose anybody. We drifted apart. We no longer had the thing in common that once held us together. And we do it throughout our lives. You know, we go to our first school. When we go to our next school, we don't bring everyone with us. We go to the school after that, we don't bring it. Then when we get into our career, we keep in touch with some people from school, some people from university. And over our life, we drift apart and we form new connections and new bonds. But I've got a friend who I've known since I was about 6 years old. So that's 54 years. We lost contact for about 20 years in the middle. But we're still friends now. So where relationships are meant to be, and there's a mutual benefit for that relationship, then you'll hang on to it. But as soon as it's one-sided or it serves neither any purpose, of course you're going to drift apart. And I think allowing yourself to be able to move on and not hold on to your past, hold on to what's holding you back, is part of that self-awareness, part of that emotional intelligence. It's what makes you happy.
Yeah, totally. Because we're afraid, because when we change and become more authentic, our family and friends are saying, like, what's wrong with you? Nothing. I'm just actually finding myself. But to them, it's like shock to the system, because actually we bond connections on a chemical level. The people, your family and your friends, it's like that chemical bond, and they can sense it on an energetic level that you've changed, and they start panicking, like, oh my God, you were better when you were on the meds or something, you know, you were better when you were this or that. You're like, well, I was suffering, by the way, when I was this and that, you know, now I'm free, like, now I'm feeling better. And but they're panicking. They're like, oh no, that's not you anymore. No, this is actually starting to become more like me. So, unless it's, yeah, it can be painful, but it's worth it. Honestly, it's worth it.
That's the hard thing about family, is because those bonds are not transient. They're kind of our social construct of family, is that these bonds are permanent. So that when we drift apart, when we grow, when we age, when we have different lived experiences, we keep coming back to our family, but our family, those bonds don't evolve. They're kind of static. And what we find is that, you know, we get together at Christmas, we get together for family reunions at a wedding. We have arguments, we have fights, we fall out because we've never evolved the bond. We've always been stuck in that time lock of where we were when that bond was formed. And parents always see us as a child. Brother always sees us as a younger person or an older person, whatever it may be. Whereas friendships, those bonds stretch and evolve. Families never do. And there's a great saying called chosen family. If you hang out with your chosen family rather than your biological family, if you want a better way of describing it, then those relationships are better because they're more authentic.
Yeah, and that's, I totally agree. And there is this funny thing that I can see across all cultures, and I've been introduced to three. It's like your family, for some reason, we have that feeling that we can kind of be rude or something to each other within the family. It's like family members can call each other names, and I don't know, it's just like be more of a abusive in a way. And you're like, well, you would never say that to your friend. Why are you saying this to me? You know, things like that. It's like, and this is, I'm kind of, yeah, I don't quite understand. I don't have an answer yet for that. But it's a bit weird in certain situations. Not all families, obviously, but there's a weird tendency, you know. I don't know. What do you think? Would you agree?
That bond is inherent between you. You know, you know that you can get angry, get upset, say things you shouldn't say. But you're always going to be a brother. You're always going to be a mother. You're always going to be a child. So maybe what it is that bond allows you to be more blunt or ruthless. Whereas with a friend, with a friendship, you're maybe more, you value that transient, maybe, nature of it. And maybe you've got close friends. Maybe you're more brutal with your closer friends because, again, that bond is very, very tight.
But then it hurts more family. If your close family members would tell you that you're stupid, that alone can cause trauma, and you might believe for the rest of your life that you're stupid. So it's like you know, or like you've made the wrong decision, or like, oh, what are you doing? You're taking the wrong path. And then you start questioning yourself and you're like, oh my God. And you're taking the wrong, and you're starting to take the wrong path by going backwards and not taking those decisions that you wanted to make. And then you're unhappy and it just all gets, so if a stranger were to come over to me and said, Daria, you're stupid, I'll be like, whatever, you know? But then if it's some close family member were to say this, it would be more hurtful, obviously.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, it is. I think it's probably down to the bond of trust as well. We have a belief that our family should be there to amplify us and protect us. And when it lets us down, it hurts more because we have a higher expectation, maybe. Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Daria, it's been absolutely fascinating. I've loved chatting away with you, and I'm sure we could carry on. So next time I'm in Glasgow, I'll drop you a message. So how can people get hold of you? How can people find more about your Vibe platform?
Thanks, John. It was a pleasure as well. And please let me know if you're in Glasgow. Yep. I'd love to go for a cuppa. Yeah, so obviously my name, Daria Krasnover. I'm on Instagram trying to share some lovely stuff. And vibeinside.com is the website where you can check what's happening. And if you want to talk to me about this or want to be maybe a part of market research, which is ongoing always, get your thoughts out. And please get in touch on LinkedIn. That's my name as well there, Daria Krasnover. And yeah, just catch me on Insta, catch me on LinkedIn, vibeinside.com. And yeah, love, kindness, compassion, gratitude, diversity, inclusion, and yeah, peace. That's all I want to see, you know. And I'm open to chat to anyone who wants a personal advice to help find their own way. I will never ever show you the way, but I might help you find your own unique way. So feel free to get in touch.
Brilliant. That's a great note to finish on, helping people find their own unique way. Love that. Thank you. Daria, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. Today's discussion struck a chord. Consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.